I'm Bobby Williams, and you are listening to Dignity, a four-part podcast docuseries about juvenile rehabilitation in Washington State. In this series, we are going to be exploring Washington's juvenile justice system. We are going to be talking about equity, education, personal relationships, peer mentors, and a whole lot more. Let's talk about juvenile incarceration. The Washington Department of Children, Youth, and Families Juvenile Rehabilitation Division oversees two medium/maximum security facilities, eight community-based facilities, with around 250 youth and young adults incarcerated at a given time. Many of these youth have committed serious crimes and can be incarcerated from a few days to several years. If you include youth who are on parole or living in a community facility, they serve around 650 youth. We're going to be having conversations with individuals from every level of this system, from state representatives to staff at maximum security facilities to incarcerated young people. We're going to get to know all of them a little bit better. This series is going to be broken into four chapters. Today, chapter one is pro-social programs at juvenile rehabilitation facilities. Chapter two is about equity in education. Chapter three is on peer mentorship and community-based rehabilitation. Finally, chapter four is about relationship building between staff and incarcerated youth, and what's motivating the people behind the system to show up to work every day. Intentions, why are we doing this? My goal with this show is to explore the human side of juvenile rehabilitation. These stories aren't sensational, they're not clickbait, it's not an action movie or something, but they're important and they need to be heard. I don't think that there's enough understanding about young people experiencing incarceration or about the adults that are trying their hardest to change the system from within. Let's get into it. This is Dignity. Chapter 1. Creativity matters. I think it's important when setting up this story to explain a little bit about who I am. Again, my name is Bobby Williams, and I'm the executive director of The Bridge Music Project. The Bridge is a nonprofit organization that teaches youth how to write, record, and perform original music that shares their stories. The Bridge recently hosted an 8-week songwriting workshop at Green Hill School in Chehalis, Washington. Green Hill is a medium/maximum security facility for young adults between the ages of 17 and 25. Here's a staff member we had a chance to work with during the Green Hill program.
I'm Jose Kaywood, and my position here within Green Hill School is the Youth Engagement Program Specialist. I oversee all of transformative mentoring, cultural groups, and I also do quality assurance for room confinement and isolation reduction.
What I've learned through being at Green Hill is that we are part of this overall movement within juvenile rehabilitation to bring more community-based programs to incarcerated young people.
So over the last 2 years, I've seen a big emphasis on equity and being able to provide as many groups as we can for these youth to try to keep them out of their rooms, try to keep them engaged, because being in your rooms, we found, is really detrimental to mental health. And so I just think one of the best things that we have going for us now is we're really putting a lot of staff, a lot of money, and a lot of training, which is money and staff, towards trying to keep youth out, engaged, and part of something, part of a group, part of a team, part of recreation, whatever it is, they're out. They're staying out of their rooms longer, they're staying up later, and staff are engaging more. And so I like that.
Here's a song we recorded at Green Hill that really stood out to me.
Well, my name is Ronald. I'm 21 years of age. In about 10 days, it's gonna change, though.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Something that really impressed me about Ron was how he was able to be so raw and honest in his songs. He was able to articulate ideas that don't often get heard in music.
Man, because I really make music for me and how I feel. So it's like, that's really therapeutic for me. That's what I turn to express how I feel. So like, I would say, I said, I've been hurting on the inside, I can reveal my pain. Rather be by myself, cause everybody moves strange. And like, it's like sometimes I feel like we're not even able to share the things that we really feel deep inside with our closest peers, you know, the ones that we are surrounded by. And I feel like that has to change, number one. You know, it's like we should be able to express the deep, dark things about ourselves. You know, we shouldn't have to feel like we have to face these battles by ourselves, you know, when we have people who care for us around. You know, we should be able to be more open, especially, you know, like man to man, you know, just understanding that, because I feel like we come from places where we have to be hard. We can't really talk about that, you know, that masculinity thing. And it's like we can talk about it and we have to talk about it. We have to face it. We have to feel it, you know, in order to like really be able to move on from it or grow from it. We have to understand what it is.
Here's another youth artist that really impressed me.
My name is Robbery, and I'm 21. I just turned 21. I would say I am a good-hearted individual caught up in a bad predicament at an early age. I grew up playing sports, you know what I'm saying, wanted to play football. And then I had a realization that football wasn't where I wanted to do, where I was going to go. So I turned towards something else, which was the streets, and then ended up being locked up at 16 for a very long time.
How long you been doing music for?
I never wrote any type of music until I had came to jail. So I would say like 2019, when I was like 16, I started writing music. And at first I was like rapping, and then I started like doing more melodic type of songs, and that's what I perfected my craft in, I would say.
Robbery explained a little more to me about music and the role it's had in his life.
At the moment, I feel like music is most important to me because I can express myself and how, you know what I'm saying, I'm feeling at the moment, and I could write whenever, you know what I'm saying? It's not like, it doesn't like inconvenience me to write. I could go in the room, write how I'm feeling if I'm feeling some type of way, and just express on paper. And me personally, I don't like expressing vocally to other people about my feelings, like venting, so I'd rather just vent like to the mic or vent to the notebook or something like that.
It's like a way to get it out still.
Yeah, it's like a coping mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool.
For the artists at Green Hill, music had become one of their main outlets in life. They were able to express themselves and tell their story in a way that was honest to them. Another place arts programming is happening is at Echo Glen, a secure facility for youth in Snoqualmie, Washington. It was there that I learned about an amazing arts program.
I'm Lindy Boosted, and I run a program called SHARE, which is screenwriting for healing, self-actualization, redemption, and empathy, where I teach screenwriting skills to incarcerated women and youth.
Lindy explained to me a little bit about the importance of her work.
Yeah, it's really when you, for me as a screenwriter, I know how redemptive and how cathartic working on, you know, your own story or putting yourself as the hero of your own story again. And so for me, it's helping young people see themselves as worthy of being the subject matter and worthy being talked about. And then, you know, just being able to have that cathartic experience of getting their emotions out there, having people better understand them in the time of their lives where they feel so misunderstood. It really is a powerful, media is powerful. We all know how powerful it is because when we're feeling intense emotions, when we're trying to like figure out our place in this world, we turn to media to help answer those questions. And it's just as powerful to make that kind of stuff, to sit down, to see yourself as the hero of your own story, to see that you still have power to write a more redemptive third act to your life. Like, this isn't the end. This is just a part of your story. Is really why I do it.
Seems like a lot of your work, what you're doing is teaching empathy, either by exposing audiences to these videos you create or getting your students to think about the role of a character in a story. You have to kind of understand what this person is thinking on some level. Do you think of it like that?
Absolutely. It's in my name. Like the last letter of Cher is E for empathy. Again, as a filmmaker and as a film lover, I just know the immense power that film has to connect us with people and show us that we're more alike than different, or help us better understand a perspective we wouldn't have been able to understand otherwise. So for me, it's trying to use that tool as effectively as possible and maximize the impact. And when you're a screenwriter and you're telling stories, you're not only writing the hero's story, your story, you're also writing all of the other character stories. And that means the person that's the greatest obstacle in your way, the villain, or, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, you got heroes and villains. And you have to not only write the hero, you have to also write the villain. So you have to understand why they are doing the way what they're doing, why they're doing it, and all of the cascade of complexity that goes into every single character in your story. And really is a healing tool, especially if they're writing stories from their own experiences, to rethink and reevaluate maybe someone they felt did them wrong. They could just have greater understanding of where they're coming from, not necessarily to, let them off the hook for what they did, but more so that you can use the power of forgiveness because you just have a greater understanding.
I understood why these programs were something artists, facility staff, and youth could get behind, but this was going beyond that. People in power were making the decision to prioritize these programs. They're working to build them into the fabric of Washington's juvenile rehabilitation system. Why?
My name is Haley Lau, and I am the Education Program Administrator for Juvenile Rehabilitation.
In Haley's work with the Washington Department of Children, Youth, and Families, she's a huge advocate for bringing community programs to Echo Glen and Green Hill. I wanted to understand her motivation.
I think that the partnerships that we have, like one I said, bringing the community to the facility because we can't take the young people to the community, that's our way of building community and showing young people that they belong, right? And how to build relationships that maybe they haven't before, how we expose them to different art forms that maybe they haven't been exposed to before. And so there's the community relationship piece, and then there is the self-expression, helping young people find their voices. So if it's through poetry, if it's through music, screenwriting, those are different opportunities to help young people find their voices, to help them heal. We know that young people who come to our facility have often experienced complex trauma. And inside or outside of a secure facility, healing from trauma it's hard work. And we have the opportunity to create the conditions for young people to really begin to heal. And that happens best when it's in community, right? And we partner with organizations that have a skill set for doing that.
While Haley functions as an advocate for community programs, she doesn't get the final say in what projects happen. I decided to work my way up the chain of command. Eventually, this led me to the Washington State Capitol campus, specifically the 1500 building. Like a lot of Capitol buildings, the lobby of the 1500 building is ornate, lots of marble. You can tell some serious government work is happening here. After meeting with an assistant, I set up my equipment in a second floor office and was told my interview subject would be with me shortly.
My name is Felice Epton. I'm the assistant secretary for Washington JR.
My question to Felice was the same one I posed to Haley. Why are community programs such a high priority for the state?
Yeah, they're going to be the backbone to which kids can and young people can cease to be involved with our systems. If we want to see good things out of young people, we have to give them a new avenue to explore, a new identity, right? So many of them are just forming their identities in the world. And that so far, for some of them, if they've become incarcerated, may just be, I'm an incarcerated individual. And I think it's more than that, that perhaps they are a musician, perhaps they're an actor, perhaps they're a screenwriter, perhaps they're a gardener. And even if that isn't their job, right? Like I like to talk about, especially with young people, right? That when you're 15, you shouldn't be thinking about your career and committing to it maybe for the rest of your life. But even as an adult, you're not going to work 24 hours a day. How else do you define yourself? And what are you going to spend your time doing? And then also understanding that many of the young people that we encounter have had kind of friends, people that have surrounded them that may not have pro-social influences. And so how do we outweigh that so that you have a community that you're now part of that is pushing you to be your best? How do you identify within that community and not have to just be formerly incarcerated, but also, which is like its own space? And also, could you all be formerly incarcerated and be a gardener and be a scholar? Could you... What are those supports? And I think the other way you hear this referred to often are in things like the adverse childhood experiences, protective factors. So we are trying to up the protective factors for young people through those experiences.
Felice's words reminded me of something I heard Ron, the youth artist from Green Hill, say to me.
Oh, man, just no matter, like, music is really what it is, no matter where you're at. I feel like music is therapeutic for those who are struggling, and how important music is. I feel like for any facility, any institution, anyone working with young people, incorporating music and arts and stuff like that can be empowering in a way. It helps youth to see themselves from a different point of view, and it helps them to be able to have this outlet in a creative way, you know? And it's like there's so much creativity in each individual's brain. So imagine when all this creativity is collectively put together and what can be created, you know, out of it, like all the positive things about it. Like I feel like music brings out positivity and helps others to understand the emotions and identify what they're feeling.
This has been the first in our four-part series about the Washington State Children, Youth, and Families Department of Juvenile Rehabilitation. In our next episode, we'll be talking about the changes happening to create a more equitable education system for incarcerated youth. I'll be returning to the state capitol and speaking with some serious change makers. I want to give a big thank you to Smoke M2D6, who produced the music you've been hearing in the background. Again, my name is Bobby Williams. This podcast is titled Dignity. We'll see you next episode. Peace!